Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Love is the dirtiest four-letter word. No hatred burns more intensely than the embers of extinguished love. Love gone wrong fuels more hideous crimes and shatters more lives than anything. It's really damn dangerous. When cops find a body shredded like pulled pork and scattered around several hectares, they don't look for robbers. They look for husbands, wives, and significant others. Sour love can turn rational people into psycho killers. Fast. But you never hear that when you need to, do you? If Match.com and Tinder and Bumble and OkCupid were really good corporate citizens, they'd have big disclaimers right there with all the attractive faces of satisfied users. And that disclaimer would say, "Warning, love can fucking kill you." And the shrapnel of bombed-out love lingers on, same as the hurt. Does anyone who grew up in a broken home look back fondly on the custody visits, the weird, uncomfortable parent-teacher meetings, the Thanksgiving and Christmas shuffles? Divorce sucks. We seldom hear the term broken home used anymore, but that's what they are. Just look at the haunted faces of the kids. Look at the financial ruin and legal bills. Love is the most hazardous emotion and the least understood. They don't teach courses in it, but they should. When I was single, I met a lot of women, and I could tell usually within the first 3 minutes or so if their parents were divorced. There was a hint of melancholy about them, a wistfulness that girls from solid families did not have. I get a lot of emails. Many of them run in a similar vein. Most often they involve career and job questions and romantic questions. Note I said romantic. They come from dudes looking for relationships, and they never mention sex, which might astonish vast numbers of females, especially those members of numerous man-hating societies. I got a couple of emails recently from guys in opposite corners of the country. One seems to have gotten himself entangled with a woman and is confused about whether he should disentangle. The other just can't seem to connect with anyone, but for a reason I never took into consideration. I've been married quite a while, so I haven't been on any dates lately, but when I think about it, dating is one of the most bizarre things people do in their entire lives. Dates, especially first dates, are completely insane. It's really a job interview. Two people meet, somehow and briefly, at a party or on a bus or a train or maybe online, and each thinks the other might be, what? Useful, really. Kinda handy to have around to do stuff with. Share a meal or a movie or some sex or life. But there are all these obligations for each party, unspoken prerequisites that are tacitly understood by both. A sum of money must be spent by him. Neither should be romantically involved with someone else. She should look good and smell good and be as visually appealing as possible. So should he, but guys are at a major disadvantage there. She has a huge arsenal of contrivances at her disposal to fake him out and reel him in if she chooses. Spike heels will lengthen her legs and increase her height while giving her ass a pleasing tilt. She can wear a push-up bra to make those orbs look more taut and alluring. She can highlight her hair, plump her lips up with collagen, color them with lipstick, shape them with liner, shine them with gloss. She can make small eyes appear bigger and deeper, accentuate cheekbones, lengthen stubby fingers with long nails, increase hip-to-waist ratio with girdles. The list is endless. What can a guy do? Shave, brush his teeth, comb his hair, put on a clean shirt. And if he does much more than that, he risks looking too studied. She might deem him a metrosexual. Is that still an insult? Who knows? There are so many now. Everything is an insult. And off they go to wherever they're going, two virtual strangers simulating friendship for a few hours. At the restaurant, or a sporting event, or a concert. Some go to movies, always a lousy choice for a date. 2 hours of not talking to each other is counterproductive. Regardless, each is only partially present for whatever the activity is. From the moment they meet, she's scanning her checklist and mentally ticking the boxes. What's his potential as a provider? How are his table manners? Is he presentable to friends? Presentable to parents? What's the quality of his DNA? Does he make me laugh? Is he a drunk or a druggie? How's his fashion sense? Doesn't matter, because by the third date she'll be dictating his wardrobe. Will he spend weekends watching football or on a golf course? Would he make a good father to her children? And lastly, might he be good in bed? He also has a checklist. And if all of her war paint and heels and appliances are working together and revving his engine, he starts ticking his own boxes. Will she go to bed? Will she be good in bed? Will she make my head explode? End of checklist. Not really, but those do tend to be the big three for dudes in the early stages of a relationship. Over time, some of the items on each one's checklist should merge. They have to, if it will ever go anywhere. Dating really is an insane process. But then, little of life makes sense, does it? I'll start off with Nick's letter first. Hey Larry, love your show, been thinking of writing to you for a while, and so here I am. I live in a small town in the Southwest. I mean really, really small, as you might say, a Mayberry. Everyone pretty much knows everybody. That said, there are no women here I want to go out with. Well, maybe one or two, but they're already married. The rest are a few single moms, not my thing, or they have big emotional or drug problems, or are just not remotely my type. The nearest town of decent size is over 60 miles away. I'm 29. I work with my dad in our own business, so my job is not portable. I'm in good shape, have no prison record, no debt, no drug habits, and would really like to meet some girl I could feel comfortable with. 30 isn't very far off, and I'm starting to feel lousy about myself. Any ideas? Thanks, Nick. Wow, Nick, thanks for listening and writing and supporting the show. Your dilemma is a tough one. I've only lived in two places, really, New York and LA. Is there a limitless supply of available women in these cities? Of course. Yet I would bet there are, proportionally, as many lonely guys and girls in each of those vast cities as there are in your small town. We all have our particular tastes and people. And the more specific they are, the more difficult it is to find somebody just right. Affairs of the heart are the most tricky things because they're only partly about the heart. They involve other body parts. And unless each is accorded consideration, the relationship will not last. Beauty and the Beast was fiction. A million more factors than one's looks or the content of their heart come into play. So Nick, what's a dude to do? You've probably heard me bash digital dating, but I'm afraid that may be your partial or at least temporary solution. Download your favorite app and look for ladies in that town that's 60 miles away. Make sure she has a car, and if things start to click, you can alternate who visits who or meet halfway on the range. That could get interesting. But still, that may be a very labor-intensive way to meet somebody you like. Maybe as a backup plan, you find meetups in that larger town, doing whatever floats your boat, whatever sport or game or hobby. And don't overlook the idea of doing volunteer work. How about for the political candidate of your choice? That would eliminate a lot of searching and at least put you in proximity of women with similar values. Over the long haul, those are the vital elements of a lasting relationship. Sure, exotic and different and maybe weird is fun for a while, but it can get old fast. And as bad as feeling lonely is, it can be much, much worse. Like when you still feel lonely with another person right beside you. Maybe someone you're legally bound to. Oh, shit. When I was getting serious with my wife, an old friend commented that we made a good pair because we, quote, see with one eye and hear with one ear. Think about volunteering for some charities. That way you further expand your exposure to new people, and the kind of women you meet may be of a better quality. They're out there doing something good for other people, not hunched over a cocktail in some gin mill getting a whiskey tan. If you believe in God, check out the church in that bigger town, too. Might be some talent there that could interest you. If you find you really enjoy the activities, consider bunking down in a motel for a weekend so you don't feel the pressure to haul ass home at night. While you're being strategic and are in town on a mission, try not to make it only about that. Do stuff that's purely fun for you without any intention of meeting people. Seems like that was always when it happened for me. I met women while skiing at the beach, in department stores, museums, and of course the keeper, my wife, we met at a party in New York. And I had no intention of attending that party. I'd just flown in from L.A. My back was stiff from the crappy airline seat and I was tired. But I was solamente and figured I'd just, do a cameo at the party. If no one interesting was in attendance, I'd fade. When I was least expecting it, I met someone so interesting, I had to marry her. Nick, you sound like a quality dude. And even though you're crowning 30... that's no reason to feel like it's game over. It's actually the best decade to be single. By then, most guys have found a career path, some financial stability, and women find those attributes very attractive. So hang in there. Remember, romance is like sales. It's a numbers game. The more women you meet, the more likely you are to find the one that's right for you. Good luck. This email is from Wayne. That's a good old-time name. It has a theme I've seen multiple times in letters from guys with very big hearts. And Wayne, having a jumbo ticker, suggested I share his with all of you. Here's what Wayne has on his mind. Hi, Larry. I met a girl through a dating app a few months back. She's 25. I just turned 22. She's totally cool. We get along great. She makes me laugh. I love being with her. Here's the but. Sometimes she gets kind of distant. Just when I feel like we're made for each other, she becomes unavailable. Or even if I do see her, she seems moody, cold, and detached. I should mention that she is a recovering addict. I know she has not relapsed, but as much as I enjoy being with her, I'm finding the ups and downs hard to deal with. She says they're not my fault, but I can't help but wonder if maybe I'm not as supportive as I could be. We've been together almost 4 months. When it's good, it's great. When it's not, I lose sleep, daydream at work, and feel awful. I really enjoy her company, and I really want to be there for her and help her. Her family is pretty messed up, also with alcohol and drug abuse issues. So my question is, how to deal with this? Thanks and take no shit, Wayne. Wayne, 22 years is awfully young to be seriously involved with anyone. But when people told me that when I was 22, they might as well have been telling me to behave myself for Santa Claus. So congratulations on finding a chick you like. It's not easy. Just ask Nick and millions of other dudes. I never dated any women in recovery. Drugs scared the hell out of me, so I made a conscious effort to avoid users. But I imagine lots of people fall for others and only find out about a drug problem once they're involved. Probably happens all the time. And some addicts are successful their entire lives in staying clean and sober. And some are not. I recently watched an interview with the late great Greg Allman, who said he was in rehab 14 times. It's hard to comprehend a number like that. But apparently, it's not all that uncommon. It's a heavy burden to carry, and unfortunately, that monkey on an addict's back hops around to the backs of friends and relatives, ergo outfits like Al-Anon. There definitely are people who are more vulnerable to addictions. The ones who beat those addictions tend to call them addictions. The ones who relapse again and again often call their addictions their disease, which is false on the face of it. Drugs are not contagious, nor will they mysteriously appear in your body like some tumor or a leaky heart valve. Calling addiction disease kind of abrogates personal responsibility. This isn't my idea. I knew a musician way back who was a former junkie and told me this. It made a lot of sense. So when your girlfriend talks about being in recovery, take note whether she refers to it as an addiction or a disease. That might tell you a lot. I'm not going to suggest you find another girlfriend, even though, unlike Nick, you live in a densely populated area where there are a limitless supply of hot and pointy women who do not have histories of substance abuse and a family that's also a hot mess. But I will draw your attention to a phrase in your email that popped right out. That phrase is, quote, "Maybe I'm not as supportive as I could be," unquote. That's a noble intention, Wayne. But at 22, shouldn't you just be having a ball? Eventually, you may have a wife and kids, and then it will be your responsibility to support them in every way. Why date someone that requires support? What's causing her moodiness? Is it a job that gets her down? She can always change that. Is it her fucked up family? She can't change that, only avoid them. But what if she's bipolar? Do you want to buy into that situation, layered with a drug problem? Only you can decide, Wayne. I've known a few guys who dated women who were not drug abusers, but had a knack for making their men feel responsible for their happiness. Ooh, that is a ticket to misery. In each case, they wound up hating each other. Only we can make ourselves happy. No other person can do it. You don't mention what her level of functionality is. If she's employed, financially stable, and self-sufficient, okay, but proceed with caution. In the plus column for her is the fact that successfully kicking a drug habit takes tremendous strength and resolve. She's been to hell and back, so she'll never be a snowflake and should have a perspective beyond her years. Might be someone good to have in the trenches with you when life throws you a freight train. And sooner or later, it will. If at 25 she's doing nothing and going nowhere and viewing you as a flotation device, get out now and don't say I didn't warn you. Good luck to you, Wayne. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Slide over to thatlarryshow.com for more content and commentary. While there, be sure to click a subscribe button so you never miss an episode. If you like what you heard, let everyone know. Post your rave review wherever you download. And if you really like what you heard, click the Patreon button. That opens up a world of bonus content and other goodies like signed books and custom recordings and the advice of yours truly and a deep bench of senseis who will help you tackle any problem and wrestle it to the ground. Kind of like Nick and Wayne. We have a lot of fun between shows on Facebook and Twitter. I guarantee you'll meet some cool listeners there. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar and you'll find us. Oh, and we're also on Instagram, where every gorgeous thumbnail is there for your perusal to help you find episodes you like. Same address, thatlarryshow.com. I hope everybody finds the love they're looking for, but in the meantime, remember this. When you put your head in the pillow, close your eyes and go to sleep, it doesn't matter who's next to you. Once you're zonked out, there's nobody there but you. I'll see you next Wednesday, and until then, take no shit. We'll be right back.